The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
And we welcome you back to another program, Afternoons with Mike, heard daily here on the Shepherd Radio Network. I've got a lovely guest with me in the studio today, someone that I had not met in person until today. Clarice Hopkins is a member of the Eatonville community, and when I say a member of it, I do mean a long-term member, because her family dates back to the very beginnings of this community that is the first established Black community in the United States, and that happened in 1887. And those that travel through I-4, pass over the bridge of Eatonville, which is just north of Lee Road, and actually it'd be aiming toward the east if you're on East I-4. That's always so confusing. And just before you get to the Maitland exit, that overpass is the street called Kennedy, and that runs right through the heart of Eatonville. My guest today, Clarice Hopkins, I'd like to say welcome to my program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It is so great. You and I got connected through a mutual friend and a relative, actually, that is part of our radio station group in Dallas, Texas.
Yes.
And Autumn is her name. And Autumn turned me over to one of her cousins, I believe it would be her cousin, and that was Ron. Mm-hmm. And Ron said, well, he's up in Alabama. He said, but who you need to talk to is Clarice, because she's right there in Eatonville. And I've wanted to do this in honor of we've just come through Black History Month.
Yes.
And I really love this community. I get to drive through it every day. Our studios, as you've found, is just outside of Eatonville.
Yes, it is.
And it is so, our radio station, the one that we're on in Orlando, is licensed to the community of Eatonville. So that's why every top of the hour, we make an announcement about that. It's licensed to Eatonville. So this town is near and dear to my heart. I love it. And I'm so grateful to meet you. And I would love, if you would, to kind of give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch, first of all, about your family. And I know that your great-great-uncle, Joe Clark, would have been one of the most instrumental people in getting this city incorporated back in 1887.
Yes, yes.
So tell us a little bit about your family, how maybe they, what you know about them, how did they get down here? Were they always from here?
No, they weren't. They actually moved to Eatonville from Tennessee.
Really?
Yes, yes.
Now that part of the history I had not read, okay.
Yes, and actually I gathered that information. My dad's oldest brother, Hubert, who is now deceased, but he put this book together and it actually has our family's history.
Oh, wow.
My great-grandfather, grandfather, grandmother, he put all of that together.
Wow.
In this book. And he said that the family, after they were freed, moved from Tennessee to this area, which was at that time Maitland, called Maitland.
So were they indentured in Tennessee then? They were affected up there, right?
Oh, yeah.
Prior to that.
Uh-huh. And the name Clark is actually from the plantation that they were on.
I read that they actually kept the name mm-hmm. that became their last name.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. so that's an interesting fact that I think a lot of people don't realize.
Right, right.
So did they ever share with you what the original proper name would have been for your family?
No, I never knew that.
Isn't that something?
I never knew that.
And I would wonder if there are even ever records of any way of ever finding that.
Mm-hmm. That would be really, really interesting. But I never heard any name other than Clark.
Do you have any other dates prior to Tennessee as to where your family would have come from directly?
Actually, I read that in the family history,
mm-hmm.
that prior to Tennessee, they were slaves on the Clark plantation in Georgia.
Okay.
Okay. And then from Georgia, they went to Tennessee, and okay. from Tennessee to Florida.
All right. Very good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I took my own family ancestry through ancestry.com,
mm-hmm.
and I was able to track it all the way back to 1850. And prior to 1850, there is no United States record because they came over from Europe.
Oh, okay.
And so I would have to then become a level member of Ancestry that is a lot more than what it costs okay. me right now. So I thought, well, okay, I'm good from 1850 on. I know where we are.
Mm-hmm.
I know where my family came from. That's fantastic that they came from Tennessee. Now, back at the time, I mean, it's not like Florida was really an inviting area to move to. In 18, what would have been in the 1850s, 1860s, because of the fact that there's no air conditioning down here. This was a hot climate to be in.
Yes.
What drew them? Do you know?
Well, Joe Clark was a visionary. Okay. He was a freed slave. He had siblings. He had family. He always wanted to be a land owner.
Now that much I read, that was in his heart to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so Florida would have been greatly unincorporated back then.
Exactly.
So I guess it seemed more possible for him to acquire land in Florida than in Tennessee.
Yes. And he was determined. And so he moved to Florida. His brothers actually followed him here.
Some of his family came with him.
Some of his family came with him.
Yeah.
And one of his brothers, William Clark, is actually noted for founding Goldsboro, which is near Sanford.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that was 4 years after Eatonville was incorporated. But at the time, the mayor of Sanford had their charter dissolved.
Oh.
He went to Tallahassee, had their charter dissolved, and had that land incorporated into the city of Sanford.
So
at the time, Sanford was a small town right on the river. But Goldsboro is... east
mm-hmm.
of downtown Sanford.
Wow.
And so they were now, and there's a street called William Clark in Sanford to this date. However, they were never able to get that land back at that time.
And I think that's a similar story, isn't it? For a lot of the other incorporated Black communities throughout the history,
mm-hmm.
they didn't make it, maybe for
right.
the same reason.
Right.
They just kind of absolved the paperwork. They kind of dissolved the boundaries of that community.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, they just absorbed it into a greater sense of the community that it was near, like Sanford.
Yes. Yes.
But Eatonville escaped all of that. They've somehow kept its identity, kept its borders,
mm-hmm.
and remained a city all those years.
Yes. And with it being nestled between Winter Park and Maitland, even today, a lot of people don't know where Eatonville is, and that may have been our saving grace. However, I think because of some sympathetic people in the area made it possible.
Well, I love it that they had that because it is such a unique community. I know that the very famous poet Zora Neale Hurston, obviously she was a person of acclaim that
mm-hmm.
grew up there and became very famous. And there's a museum now for her. Her work is still appreciated across the world. And people just don't realize what a treasure. It's like a diamond.
It is.
Right here in the middle of our yard, mm-hmm. of the yard of Orlando, if you
yes.
will.
Yes. And you know, one thing about Zora is in her books, see, there were no laws back then to determine what you could write about or if you could use people's names or mm-hmm. their stories. Or,
right.
You know, there was no laws back then. So she used people's real names and their real stories.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of the things that some of the residents probably did not like it, but the other writers liked her style of writing.
So tell me, we'll come back to Zora because okay. I want to cover that more in a moment. Mm-hmm. Let's stay with your family for a moment.
Okay.
And the way you came down from all of these relatives that moved here in the late 1800s, mm-hmm. you grew up in your entire life in Eatonville, right?
I did. My father was born on Clark Street.
Oh,
which is
man.
One street behind St. Lawrence, and that street was named after the family. The street directly behind St. Lawrence Church, and also the family's property was that property behind the church, behind mm-hmm. St. Lawrence.
So growing up in Eatonville, what are your earliest memories of the community, of life here in Central Florida?
You know, Eatonville was actually a wonderful place to grow up. I felt protected. The one thing that I remember about my family, my father was very protective because he had 5 girls and 2 boys.
He had to be protective.
He had to be protective.
That's right.
But everybody, you know, the saying that it takes a village to mm-hmm. raise a child. That's how Eatonville was back in the day when I came up.
Everyone watched out for them. Everybody else.
Everyone watched out for everyone else.
Yeah.
And everyone knew who your parents were. Everyone could discipline you, chastise you. And we were just so tight-knit in our community. We were not allowed to go cross the street, the main street.
Mm-hmm.
My mother, it's a funny story. My mother would leave us a nickel each every day when she went off to work in the summer. But we were not allowed to go to the store, which was across the street. So I asked my mother one day, why do you leave us a nickel, but you won't allow us to go to the store?
And that's a reasonable question.
Mm-hmm. And she said, just in case the ice cream man comes by.
Oh, well, now there we go.
Mm-hmm.
There's a mother who loves her kid right there.
Mm-hmm. And the post office at the time where my grandmother worked was kind of catacornered to the store. And we knew we were not supposed to go to the store, so we would sneak and go.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
Try to hide behind telegram poles. And my grandmother always saw us. They were wooden. We call them telegram poles, but they were actually poles for
the telephone lines.
Power lines.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But we called them at that time telegram poles. And my grandmother would always see us. And of course, you know what happened later on.
Oh, yeah. It's time to break out the switch without a doubt, huh?
Yes. But and that's my grandmother on my father's side. My grandfather on my mother's side, his name was S.T. Thomas, and he was actually the chief of police at one time. But he was well respected in the town. And I remember the street. The main street, Kennedy,
mm-hmm.
it was just a rut in the road.
Yeah.
And so.
Wouldn't have even been paved back then.
No, it wasn't paved.
Yeah.
But if a car was coming east, then the car going west would pull over to the side to let the car go by. But I remember my aunts telling me stories of how if one of them, ST's daughters, walked, you know, was walking on the main street, the men would move over to the other side of the street out of respect for them and their father.
Isn't that something?
Yes. Yes.
So this was all pre-Disney, obviously. Orlando looked nothing like what it looks like right now.
Nothing like it was.
Kennedy was, like you said, a dirt road.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these communities that were like Eatonville were not that different from Eatonville.
No.
From the standpoint of no tech or any of that. It's just that was growing up in a different zone than today.
Yes. And at Macedonia, which is my home church, only church I've ever been a member of from a little girl. And we had a church bell. And that bell would ring if there was an emergency, if there was a fire, it would ring a certain way. If there was a death in the community, it would ring another way.
Oh, wow.
If the football team, Hungerford football team won the game, you could hear the bell. And that bell was, you could hear it all over Eatonville. And if it rang and there was a fire, that particular ring, people would come running from all directions.
Oh, that's something.
Mm-hmm.
So the church was a real center of the community.
Oh, yes, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And that was your church. You ended up working there for 26 years.
Yes.
What were your roles?
Oh, wow. I had so many. But I thank God for the opportunity to work in the church. I was the pastor. I started out as an administrative assistant. And then I was promoted to office manager and then executive assistant to the pastor. I did all of his scheduling. There were so many different things. Because as you know, when people come to church, all they see is, you know, they're in the audience. Everything is perfect. They have no clue as to what goes on behind the scene.
Well, most people still joke about pastors' roles. They only work one day, right? I mean, that's exactly.
Yes. Yes.
And we all know that's crazy.
That's crazy. That is crazy.
Right.
But I did everything from planning programs to planning schedules and greeting people and working with benevolence and working with organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I had a full-time job.
Yep.
And my job was to assist a pastor in any way that was necessary to make him look good, but also to make sure that his vision was carried out.
And I think that's the real key right there.
Mm-hmm. Is
because it takes more than just a pastor to do all of that. It takes his team, and you were part of that.
Mm-hmm.
26 years at Macedonia Missionary Baptist Church. My guest is Clarice Hopkins. She is a relative of the founder of the community called Eatonville. We'll be back with her in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're on The Shepherd.
If you're a Christian business person and you want to meet people who want to do business with you, you need to join the Central Florida Christian Chamber of Commerce. Why? Because the mission of the Christian Chamber is to build kingdom, business, and community. And it all starts with the Christian principle of building relationships. To learn more about the Christian Chamber and all the different ways you can get engaged with hundreds of other Central Florida Christian business people, visit cfchristianchamber.com or call 407-258-3570.
With me today is Clarice Hopkins from Eatonville. Clarice is a long-term resident of Central Florida. She grew up right in the middle of this community called Eatonville, which was founded in 1887 by one of her relatives. And that would be her great-great-uncle, Joe Clark. And we heard in segment one, Clarice, about Joe's desire to be a property owner.
Yes.
And he moved down basically to Central Florida and brought some of his family members with him. They came along for the ride.
Yes.
And he began to petition area residents to become just that, a homeowner. And he found some people that would work with him.
Yes.
And he acquired a bunch of acres.
Yes. Yes, he did. I believe it was 112 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And it was through Josiah Eaton and Lewis Lawrence.
Hence the name Eatonville, because as it was incorporated a few years later, they honored the community with his last name then.
Yes, and the church, St. Lawrence, was named after Lewis Lawrence.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Now, I did not know that.
Yes.
So all of this is why you're here, to help us know all of these details. Mm-hmm. Now, another unbelievable and very sad part of the family story has to do with your grandmother, who by her own work became very well known, not only in Eatonville, but around the country, because she was the first ever United States, would be a postmaster, but it was called back then postmistress, right?
Correct.
And tell us her story.
Well, my grandmother was very industrious. She had 8 children. She was a single mother, and she needed to provide for her children. So she started out as doing domestic work. And when the opportunity presented itself, she wrote a proposal to the Maitland Post Office. Eatonville actually is a subsidiary of the Maitland Post Office. We are still a part of the Maitland Post Office. We have the same zip code, 32751. But in any case, my grandmother, wrote the proposal. It was granted to her, and she started the post office in Eatonville.
Even though it is a subsidiary, as you said, of Maitland, Eatonville does have its own post office then.
Yes.
And she was...
She ran the post
office. She ran it. And it was kind of like her proposal.
Yes. And she would see all of the kids walking home from school if they were playing or, you know, she chastised all of the kids as they passed by the post office.
Wow.
And she had a reputation of being mean. They say, oh, Miss Alexander is mean, because her married name was Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
And but she wasn't mean. She was just caring. She cared for the children.
It's like you said, they were watching out for other people.
Yes, always, always. And so in October of 1979, she was very methodical. She got to work at 8 o'clock every day. She left at 12 noon. She returned at 1 o'clock until 5. And that was her routine every day. Well, one day she was leaving, and the post office now is in the original spot that it was when she worked there.
Mm.
But at the time of her kidnapping, they had moved to the corner of Kennedy and Wymore. You know, that red brick building.
Oh, that's right up, right up from our studio.
Right. And so as she was leaving one day at noon, actually, it was right when she was getting ready to leave, because they came inside of the post office.
Right. So she would go for lunch then. She would go out, leave for lunch, then come back.
Yeah. And so what the guy did was, there were two of them. However, Lynn Roy Bodison was the man that actually is credited with the kidnapping. He came inside of the post office. He wanted her to validate some money orders, but she didn't validate them. She pretended to validate them, and she did not. So soon after the kidnapping, he stopped at several places to try to cash the money orders, and he couldn't cash them.
He didn't realize that she had.
And immediately the FBI was on his trail.
Right.
And so this was on a Friday, and unfortunately they found her body early Monday morning in Taft. And so he was after 22 years on death row, and the federal government allowed the state of Florida to try him because there was no corporal punishment under the federal laws at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So he could get the death penalty if the state of Florida tried him. And mm-hmm. so that's what happened. But he was on death row for 22 years.
Wow.
And Governor Martinez actually signed his death mm-hmm. certificate or...
So he was executed.
He was executed mm-hmm. 22 years later.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's a sad story. And that's your yes. own grandmother.
Yes.
Wow.
And my grandmother was very active. She played bridge. She sold Avon forever. She did ceramics. She crocheted. She was very, very, she had a very active lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was actually 74 when she was kidnapped, but she was going to work every day. You know, she had a very active life.
Wow. How old would you have been then when this happened?
79. I might have been around 20, mm-hmm. 23.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. So you knew her well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. I know that's a big shock, not only to the community, which when a public servant like that is yes. accosted, kidnapped, then murdered.
Mm-hmm.
That's big stuff that was going on. And I wasn't a member of this community back then mm-hmm. to know all of that yes. firsthand.
Yes.
But boy, that is always a very serious thing when that goes on. And it had mm-hmm. to be doubly so for a member of your own family.
Oh, yes. Yes. It had some very, very profound effects on our family. But, you know, I think our faith is what got us through it.
Well, I'm really glad you said that. What is your early remembrance of coming to where this is something more than just what you saw your mom and dad do or your family do with regard to going to church, but it became very personal for you and the faith in the Lord became very real in your own life? What are your earliest memories of that?
Well, my mother, was the spiritual leader in our home. My father went to church, but he didn't go as often as my mother. My mother took us to the Baptist church. My father was a member of the Methodist church. And so as far back as I can remember, we were always in church. It became very real to me in my early 20s, because I had lived that lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when I really gave my life to Christ and made a commitment that he would be Lord of my life, I was in my early 20s.
Oh, that's great. And how good of God to call you and then give you this vision to work in that church.
Mm-hmm.
And you were working in the very church that you attended when you were a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
That's mm-hmm. got to be very special.
Yes. I've only had two pastors, Reverend Lias, who came in the 50s, and he was there until the beginning of 1987. And then Pastor Barnes, who is the current pastor, he came in October of 87.
And he's still there?
Yes,
he's still there. That is so awesome.
He is still there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we're living in a day where that kind of longevity is not seen everywhere.
Oh, really? Yes, yes, for sure.
And mm-hmm. that's really special when you do see it.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
And you've been the benefactor of all of that. How in your mind, I know Eatonville's changed a lot. I mean, it's obviously gone through a lot of rehabbing of the buildings that are there. What is your, we talked about in segment one to come back to Zora, mm-hmm. and there's a museum there for mm-hmm. her and mm-hmm. her influence on drawing attention to this
yes,
community.
Yes.
Because again, this is the nation's oldest incorporated Black community.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to, when we look at Eatonville, we know that Zora is what has, like you said, brought attention to Edenville. Mm-hmm. And so we're very thankful for that. I think that, however, we have not developed in a way that could bring financial empowerment to the town.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that will come, because oftentimes a lot of students go away to school, get their degrees, and they don't come back.
They don't come back to Edenville.
They don't come back.
Yeah.
Because we don't offer the same things that other communities offer them. And so I'm praying that we will get to that point where we can offer students something attractive that would make them want to come back and give back to the town mm-hmm. of Edenville.
We mentioned in the first segment another well-known thing about Edenville. The Museum for Zora Neale Hurston is there, plus an annual celebration on her life, on her work. Mm-hmm. Also, Macedonia, got to say that. Macedonia, yes. Missionary Baptist Church, been mm-hmm. around for all of these years. What are some of the other highlights of the community?
Well, it's really hard to say. I do know that a group of, I guess, millennials tried to, well, I'm not sure where it's going this year, but last year they had the Juneteenth celebration, mm-hmm. which we've done in the past, but it kind of fizzled out. I think we're seeing some of the millennials come back and offer services to the community. We have to learn to be receptive and inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's maybe one of the reasons that we have not moved forward as fast as we should have.
Mm-hmm.
But my prayer is that Edenville will begin to thrive again. When I was growing up, we had a grocery store. We didn't have a bank, but everything that you needed aside from the banking, you could get it in Edenville.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the streets used to be busy with people up and down the street. You know, you'd walk down the sidewalk and somebody from the other side of the street would wave at you. And, you know, just it was a thriving community. Mm-hmm. And I want to see Edenville get back to that. I want to be able to walk down the street in Edenville and go to the ice cream shop and sit out front and watch the people pass by. And, you know, I that's how I grew up in Edenville.
Right, right.
And that's what I want to see it get back to.
How's population compared to your years of growing up there?
Well, I believe the population is down. Now, but then we have, there's an apartment complex down on Kennedy, and I think that has hundreds of units in it. I don't know exactly how many. Excuse me. Also, there's another apartment complex going up across the street.
Mm-hmm.
How that's going to affect Edenville, I'm not really sure. Because I think I've been told that the rent at one of those locations, the biggest one, most Edenville residents could not afford it.
Mm. So there are a lot of factors that really go into mm-hmm. A community's growth. Obviously, it needs to have some sort of enterprise, be it a business mm-hmm. that attracts people to come and live there. But it is still, it is one of these areas that is obviously a national historic monument of sorts set up all around Eatonville. And you've got that wonderful overpass of I-4 where it crosses over Kennedy. And it talks about a town of freedom. And that's what Eatonville has been.
Yes. And also, I think if we, our history is there. We will never lose our history. We just have to make sure that everyone knows our history. Mm-hmm. We have to tell our story. People need to know what Eatonville is, even before they move here.
Right.
You know, and then I have to say this. I serve on the board for the first financial institution in Eatonville.
Wow.
That was established in December. The charter was signed December of 2021. And this is the first financial institution in the city of Eatonville.
Is it a bank or would it be
It's a credit
union.
It's Unity of Eatonville Federal Credit Union.
Well, congratulations on that. That's a big step.
Yes. And we are still excited because I think this will be a catalyst for other first in the town of Eatonville, for businesses, for restaurants, for all banks, all kinds of businesses. I can envision that in the town of Eatonville. And all of the places, when I was growing up, there were not empty spaces along Kennedy. But I anticipate buildings and people.
That's awesome.
In Eatonville again.
Clarice Hopkins has been my guest. It's so great to meet you. Thank you for
you as well.
Thank you. Thank you for your sharing all of this with us and educating us on this wonderful community. And we wish you the best, and we wish all of these efforts great success in the future. I'll be right back. This is Afternoons with Mike.
Join host Mike Gilland for The Shepherd at Work every Saturday morning at 10:05 a.m. You will be introduced to a marketplace leader that will help you learn to walk out your faith wherever you live and work. The Shepherd at Work is sponsored by the Central Florida Christian Chamber, building kingdom, business, and community throughout our area. That's The Shepherd at Work, this Saturday morning at 10:05 a.m.
Back again now with segment 3 of my program, and I have got on the phone a wonderful friend over the past several years. He is heard daily on our stations in Ocala and also in Gainesville. Audley McLean has led the Bible Speaks program, which is aired on Sunday mornings. And then every day at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, he has a 5-minute program called Words of Inspiration. And this was the last week. Audley is retiring at the end of this particular week's programs, and I wanted to get him on, first of all, to say thank you for all that you've done for Christian broadcasting over the years, Audley. But first of all, welcome back to my program, Audley McLean.
Well, thank you, Mike. And you spoke about privileges. The privileges have been mine over the years, the help from you and the dissemination of the word through Shepherd Radio has been a privilege I've enjoyed, and I give God thanks.
Well, it's wonderful to have had you on in those stations. And I know that you're part of this ministry called Harvest. And people that may not have, especially those in Orlando, that would not have heard you, and they think, now, where's that accent from? Tell everyone again about where you are from.
Well, let me talk about Harvest. I'm sheltered under the umbrella of Harvest International. It's a ministry that supports, not financially, but in every other way, people who are called of God and are probably not under the average or normal mission board outlet. So they have missionaries in the Caribbean, in Europe, in India, and Africa. And they take care of all the nuts and bolts of keeping people going. And I happen to be the radio voice that they support, and my programs are heard on harvestinternational.org. Now, I'm retired, but Harvest isn't. They are continuing.
Right.
They deserve your prayers.
They are continuing, but again, you are retiring, and your voice is the one that I have so enjoyed. Number one, our times together, but I mentioned your accent, and go ahead and tell everybody where you're from.
Well, I was born in Jamaica. I was born in the parish of Manchester and grew up in the city of Kingston.
Wow.
Now, I kind of jokingly tell people, I say Manchester because it's kind of sophisticated. It's a great parish. But the little hole in which I was, where I was when I was born, my mother was, is called Jackass Hill. Now, don't you draw any comparisons, Brother Mike.
I don't think I've known that. That is a funny stat right there.
Right, and I was asking you not to identify me with the jackasses, although some people do.
All right. We're going to let that one go right now, and I'm sure no one would ever make such a comparison as that, my friend. Now, you're from Jamaica, but you're also a lover of hot sauce, and you've actually cooked up your own bottle of that stuff. Tell us about that.
I created the Jamaican gourmet brand, and I make what people tell me is a wonderful hot sauce. It's blended with fruit, and it's not just your average hot sauce. It's actually a healthy, good tasting condiment.
All right. Now, what kind of pepper would give it its hotness? What do you use?
Well, the people who know peppers will understand. It's the Scotch bonnet. It's the hottest level of the habanero family.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
my goodness.
Its virtue is more than the heat it comes with, but its flavor is, and its aroma are absolutely delicious, wonderful.
Are you still making that sauce today?
Well, yes and no, Mike. The Lord has led me to discontinue the business, but I have so many people around the country who insist that they must have it, so we're continuing to produce it just for them and for anybody else who wants to.
Oh, that's great. I know that you have done that in the past and given that out to friends as well, and I know they really enjoy it. Well, this has got to be a bit of a week of for you for coming to this point of retirement. I know that's not easy, but you are a man of kind of nearing the age of retirement, right? I mean, I think you're getting close to retirement age, right?
Pretty close. I spent 92 of those years, and then I'm looking forward to the rest of that before I retire.
92 years old, and up until and through this Friday here on The Shepherd, still on the air. I just think that's a marvelous thing, my friend, and I want you to know how much, again, people love and appreciate you, and you're giving the word so faithfully. Tell everybody how it was that you came to know the Lord.
Well, I was 15 years old, and I was getting wild. I was mixing with older teenagers and young adults because I had left the day school scene and gone to work full-time in a department store at age 13. And never got back to the daytime school. I did go to the Kingston Technical College at night. I got a scholarship. And so I continued my education by night. But I was getting into the wrong company, learning the wrong things, had no interest in the things of God. But in a wonderful, miraculous way, in January of 1947, my mother forced me to go and hear Harold Wildish, great English evangelist, under a big tent, preach the gospel. And God broke me down.
Wow.
And brought me to the cross.
You were saved in a tent revival.
Yes, sir. It was so big. They planned it for 3 weeks, and the crowds kept coming, and so it went on to 6 weeks, and it couldn't stop. It went on for 3 months. It was indeed a modern-day revival at that time.
Right.
The first baptism was held on Easter Sunday, 1947, in the ocean.
Mm.
And 84 of us were baptized.
Wow.
And that launched me. And they were a very mission-minded, evangelistic thrust in that little church. And it never stopped till this day.
Was the person that was conducting that series of meetings, was he a name that people would recognize?
Perhaps not today, because he's gone to be with the Lord. But he's an English evangelist who went as a missionary to the Amazon, but contracted some sort of tropical disease, and the doctors thought it better for him not to do that. So he became an evangelist, came to Jamaica, throughout the Caribbean, and around the world. He was an outstanding preacher of the Word of God.
Wow.
And he spoke at the Keswick Convention in Florida and around the world. The name Harold Wildish, you might want to Google that. It's an amazing story.
Harold Wildish, you said?
Yes, W-I-L-D-I-S-H.
Just the Wildish. Way it sounded, like Wildish, yeah. Well, that is something that I am going to Google, Harold Wildish. And,
yes.
You know, when you think about, even back then, I know that there were a lot of tent preachers that were very well known, and people would come from miles and miles around. But for someone in Jamaica like yourself to be so affected, so impacted, and for that series of meetings to go on for 90 days, that had to be the real deal.
It was the real deal, and he was the real deal. He was the son of a British merchant, and was heir to a sizable business fortune, but he left it all when God called him to the ministry.
Wow.
Now, I mentioned being born and saved and raised in Jamaica, but then I spent 35 of my adult years in Buffalo, New York,
right,
as a minister to the city of Buffalo, actually.
That's so great. I do remember that from our previous time. And so you came down to Florida after a very successful ministry in New York.
Yes. Successful with times of spiritual breakdown. And God, in His grace, brought me back into the fold and into the fray. And thank God for His amazing grace.
Now, a lot of people, oddly, would have kind of hung up the microphone, if you will, a long time ago, but you've kept it going all this time. I know it would have been easier for you not to do it. What drove you on to age 92 to continue?
Well, I had hung it up, Mike. I hung it up based on guilt. I felt as though I could never return to that after I failed the Lord miserably. I don't say that with any pride, but I think we need to be honest with people. But then after I said it wasn't possible, the Lord met with me here in Florida and challenged me. I can't explain with any clarity how God literally spoke into my heart, and He took me to a verse in Joel chapter 2, and he said, as he said to Israel, I will restore the years, the palm worm and the canker worm
mm-hmm.
have eaten.
Yes.
And I had on my knees a conversation, a quarrel, a fight, if you would, I say it reverently, with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Lord, I can't. You don't know where I'm coming from, as if God didn't know. And so we had this back and forth on my knees as he brought before me men who had messed up completely. And then I said, yes, Lord, but I'm too old. At that time, I was 77.
Wow.
And of course, playing in my head was God's record, as if he was asking me, do you remember a man named Moses, a guy named?
Yeah. I do recognize that name.
A guy named Caleb. I mean, and one after another. It was like I was doing battle with the Lord. And
yeah.
Then it seems as though I lost the battle.
Yep, I think he won, and he convinced you that you were not yet done.
Yes, I think so.
Well,
Mike, let me offer a retirement plan that I find in the Bible.
Okay, we've got about 2 minutes left, so give it to me.
Okay, well, of all the great patriarchs of whom God wrote, it says he lived to be so-and-so, and he died. So the operative words are, and he died.
That's right. It's happening to us all, my friend.
Okay. And so that's when the retirement comes in for me.
That's it. That's right. Yeah. I see where you're going with that now. And I think you're right. You're not really retiring completely yet. You're just changing what you do during the course of a day. And I want you to know we're going to miss you on the air. And thank you for your years of service and the study that went behind it, words of inspiration that's aired so long now on The Shepherd that will change after Friday. But I know that your love for the Lord will not change, and we'll still be in touch with you, my friend.
I appreciate that, and may God bless you abundantly in all you do, and thank you for keeping this old man alive. God bless you and all that the station and its participants do for the glory of God.
I appreciate that, Audley. Audley McLean from the program Words of Inspiration and the Bible Speaks. God bless you, Audley. And friends, thanks for joining us today on yet another program, Afternoons with Mike. We'll see you next time.